Pacific Monterey Bay Public Radio. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of my program is World Watchers. Before we begin, World Watchers, I want to say that the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kazoo staff or board of directors. This hour, World Watchers, is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the arts of in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. That is a new sponsor for this program, and we appreciate that. It sounds nice to say. Aries Arts is part of the World Watchers, helping World Watchers and Kazoo. The broadcast I'm doing of World Watchers is program number 836. It's December the 14th, 1987, and the year is growing older and will close very shortly. What a year this has been. The Reaganism of the Week, the quotation of the week that I found interesting, Lou Cannon, the reporter, always prints one in the newspapers every week, was when Ronald Reagan was asked a question about Mr. Gorbachev and said Gorbachev was popular. Did he mind that? And Reagan said, "No, I don't resent his popularity or anything else. Good Lord, I co-starred with Errol Flynn once." Well, I wonder how that translates for people who've heard my many, many broadcasts about Errol Flynn in the Gestapo at a time when Ronald Reagan was an informer for J. Edgar Hoover, starting in 1941. He was the informer in 41. J. Edgar Hoover was in touch with Heinrich Himmler through that period up until Pearl Harbor. Their common denominator was the FBI and Interpol, Hitler's police agency. And he not only starred with Errol Flynn once, he starred with him in 1940 and 1942 at the height of Errol Flynn's activities with his agent, Dr. Urban, of the Gestapo, the Waffen-SS. And I often think that the Gestapo rubbed each other in a way that they both used those philosophies to get where they were going to go for a long period of years. Ronald Reagan is still pulling a lot of the Nazi activities that should have ended after the end of World War II, and I detail those week after week. And I just a few weeks ago, I cited the recent New Yorker magazine and documents from Freedom of Information Act that described Ronald Reagan's informer activities, informer T-19, in 1941. Last week, Reza Gorbachev was walking around holding the hand of Pamela Harriman. Somebody on the talk show part of my program wanted to talk about that, and I said I would bring in a lot of material about Mrs. Harriman. It was Avril Harriman, who was our ambassador to Moscow, who began the first spying against the Soviet Union when World War II was over. He started it, setting up agencies for William Donovan and William Casey in 1943, the same year that the Nazis, in quotes, went underground, the notorious year 1943, where so many things were taking place to set the stage for the resurgence of Nazism, which is coming in leaps and bounds now. And I'll detail some of that information I've gotten from Germany regarding the neutron bomb for the greater part of this program. Next week, I'll discuss Avril Harriman and his wife, Pamela, and their role in genocide. They were very strong in entertaining persons who were, in fact, in favor of genocide and racial policies. They had a conference where Dr. Ernest Rudin came to speak in the United States. It was a conference on eugenics at the Museum of Natural History in New York. And Dr. Ernest Rudin, in 1932, was speaking for the Harrimans and then went on to be the high Nazi official in charge of, in quotes, protection of German blood and German honor. And this information I'll detail with you. It's interesting how Mrs. Gorbachev, who may easily be a white Russian czarist, and she's playing the First Lady of Russia quite eloquently, but that does not necessarily mean that she came up from peasant stock of any sort or is part of the Russian Revolution, except for the purpose of putting the Tsar or the Hitler entourage onto the what would be the throne then of Russia. Everything looked good the week of the summit and the parties, but we have to keep this in mind. because the Harrimans, well, they were Democrats all their life, were very instrumental in entertaining people who were behind genocide and genocidal policies. I appreciate somebody calling in last week about that connection of Mrs. Harriman touring around Washington and the first person to entertain Mrs. Gorbachev. But we do have to keep our eyes open and keep our attention to where these people came from or where they might be going, because wherever they go, we go with them in some way or another. There was an article this past week, a $1 million reward for Joseph Mengele. There are people in Palestine, in Jerusalem, rather, in Israel, and in the United States that do not believe that Joseph Mengele did not die in Brazil in 1979. I know he didn't die in 1979. And there is absolutely not a bit of proof that that was Joseph Mengele in the grave when they dug it up June the 6th, 1985. That was such a crazy story that, rather, it was the story, the account was that he was fished out of the water in São Paulo, Brazil, and then the autopsy was done June 6th, 1985. That drowned man was not Joseph Mengele. So I've done so many broadcasts on that subject at the time and detailed the information, and usually the material that I select for you to have on the air are things that are unfinished, where the original cover story was a lie, where I update it later, where the story can't rest because the story isn't true. Now, many of you might have seen this past week that the head of NATO is now going to be a German. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story December the 12th. German gets top NATO post. NATO appointed West German Defense Minister Manfred Werner, W-O-E-R-N-E-R, to succeed Britain's Lord Carrington as Secretary General. Lord Carrington is on the board of directors and co-partners of Henry Kissinger, of Kissinger Associates, the same agency that Representative Henry Gonzalez accused of having the State Department, leasing their State Department to Kissinger Associates. And Lord Carrington is stepping aside. So for the very first time since NATO was ever put together, Mr. Werner will become the head of NATO from Germany. The San Francisco Chronicle said, Werner, a tireless campaigner for greater military spending to counter a Soviet military buildup, won the decisive backing of the United States and key NATO members, including France and Britain. He will be the first West German to hold the NATO's most senior political post, France and Britain, and those are the two countries with the United States that I want to share the information with you this evening about the neutron bomb. The neutron bomb, I'm sure most of you know just what that is, as against the atomic bomb that leads so much radiation and messy stuff that can contaminate the earth it drops on and things around it for so long. The great scientists came up with a neutron bomb, a form of radiation that only gets rid of the people, so that the houses and the churches and the homes and the clothes and the belongings are all intact, and the new tenant comes in and you don't have to worry anymore. The people just lie down and die and you move in and take over. That's really much more sensible. Why have all that mess? And of course, it's my contention, and I did about 8 broadcasts on it, that the neutron bomb was tested in Cameroon, that the explosion there in 1986 was a neutron bomb tested by the United States and Israel for the purposes of seeing how it works over the ground. It's tested also in the South Pacific. I'll do more on that in a moment. But to give a warning to Russia, just as we dropped the atomic bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we didn't have to do that, and people agree that the Japanese were ready to surrender, and if we had seen this happen in a place where there weren't all the women and children during the daytime, they might have just as easily surrendered. The point was to give a lesson about how we don't hesitate to kill women and children and families who are not at war, not at all, and we could test the plutonium and the uranium, try 2 different kinds of bombs at the same time, and then Russia would get the lesson, we have the bomb, now what are you going to do about it? And so one of the reasons that is part of the historical record, we dropped the atomic bomb in order to declare that for the for the moment, we are masters of the world. You don't have it, and we have it. And so I went to my files of earlier articles. I have one from 1978. This is in the Las Vegas Sun, titled, Russia Tested the Neutron Bomb, According to Brezhnev. Soviet President Leonid Brezhnev told a group of U.S. senators Friday in Moscow, they were visiting in Moscow, the Soviet Union had tested, but they hadn't started the production of a neutron bomb in 1978. One senator said he didn't think that was a serious matter. Mr. Brezhnev was upbeat because Jimmy Carter was friendly towards him. The tensions in Washington had been reduced. And Senator Sam Nunn, who attended the session, commented on the neutron bomb. He said the whole thing about whether they tested one or whether they might have one or the capability of one isn't an important factor. In some ways, I feel more comfortable if the Soviets had neutron bombs rather than the monster they call the tactical nuclear weapons. Neutron bombs could be used locally for defense or against tank attacks and so forth. Senator Abraham Ribicoff was at the meeting and had a session, and Brezhnev then told them that they had actually exploded the neutron bomb, but they weren't going to manufacture them at the moment. The article continued, this is 1978, the United States has tested its own neutron bomb underground, and President Carter ordered a go-ahead on the development and protection and production of the components that could be used for it. A decision to assemble the weapons and deploy them in Europe has been delayed indefinitely. And again, this goes back to 1978. Brezhnev was in a jovial mood, exchanged friendly words with them, and they agreed that they would both sit on the bomb. Each one had it, and they wouldn't be manufacturing them with any great speed. And starting in September of 1986, I did broadcast, as I say, on neutron bombs, on the origin of chemical biological warfare after World War II, genetic warfare, and the use of various testings in Utah, the atomic tests that were quite dangerous to sheep and humans, many who got cancer afterwards. And I also cited the visit of Shimon Peres to Cameroon and his taking 17 Israeli soldiers, army medical with him in the medical corps as soon as that explosion allegedly out of the lake in Cameroon was happening. The Israeli doctors were there, and of course broadcast 769-770-771. 774. These are all World Watchers, September and October of 86, were all on the neutron bomb. Now I'm going to share with you for probably the remaining part of the program about the neutron bomb in Europe and the story of how it's developing and how it is placed in Germany, ready to be put on atomic warheads for offensive weapons. There is a World Watcher, a lady who gets the broadcast, who's corresponded with me in Germany, and she's terrified of what's going on there. And she said, it really looks like a war is ready to start. I bring this up because with the last week at the summit, I think it's appropriate to see what's going on the other side of the world and how the people there and here decide that we don't need to know everything that's going on. If you have friends in Germany or Europe, they'll tell you these stories. And if you don't have, you don't know what's happening. So I want to share just German newspapers. Now, if I try some German words this evening, forgive my pronunciation. I don't even pretend to pronounce German words, but just to get the effect of what the headlines are saying in Germany, I want to share these with you. Spiegel magazine, issue 43, 1987, had an article called Catastrophe. That's a translation of their lead story. And this is a resume of what went on at Cameroon. They just came out with this report. The scientists have now discovered the cause of the catastrophe at Cameroon, whereby 1,700 people living near Neos Lake region died. Germany, Iceland, and Japan have scientists that believe they have solved the puzzle. Now, this has been going on. This is December of 87. The explosion was August, September of 86. And there hasn't been one report that can absolutely say how the people got their burns or for a fact what happened. They believe this is happening, or they believe this is possible, and every report so far has been clarified by the word that they believe, not that they solved the puzzle, but they believe they have. They said a constant stream of carbon dioxide combined with other gases transformed into a deadly gas trap, and most of those few who survived, women and children, woke up hours or days after the catastrophe as if they were in a coma. This account from Germany doesn't say, again, how they have the burns, which are not consistent with gases escaping. The article said the only other time scientists ever studied a comparable gas eruption was August 15, 1984, 2 years earlier, near Manoon Lake, where 37 people died from a deadly cloud of gas. The danger, they said, has not been eliminated. Therefore, the 3,400 people cannot return to their farmland. They haven't been allowed to return to the farmland. Now, as I had on the air in 1986, 17 members of the Israeli Army medical team arrived immediately after the explosion, while their prime minister, Shimon Peres, was in Cameroon, in the capital of Cameroon. And yet the Israeli scientists have never, or at least not been reported at any of the conferences on what they saw or their conclusions, and Israeli scientists are pretty good at this kind of estimating at what causes these events. Also, I might mention that 3 weeks after I started my broadcast on the neutron testing in Cameroon, the story broke in the London Times, given to them by Mordecai Vanenu, that Israel not only had a large facility for making many atomic bombs, which they had done, but that they could make or were making neutron bombs. And the name neutron was in the headlines of the London Times. Before that could be published, Israel had kidnapped Mordecai Vanenu, and he has only been seen once or twice. He's supposed to be having a trial now on treason for revealing the storage facilities and the factory for the bombs. And only a few articles in all of the year and a half have mentioned the neutron bombs. A friend of mine heard a broadcast on another radio station where Vanenu's brother has been lecturing around the country talking about the plight of his brother, the way he's been treated in Israel, and the way he was kidnapped out of England and then taken to Rome and then to Israel, injected, tied down, and then sequestered away. And I understand that his brother is talking about the neutron bomb. I had contact with him. I have the phone number of a lady in Boston that set up his speaking engagement. But I understand that would be a big breakthrough to explain why they're treating Mordecai Vanenu the way they are. This article tells, as I say, about these doctors getting together in having a conference from Germany, Iceland, and Japan, and not including the Israeli team that was the one right on the spot. The next article from Germany is March 24th, 1987, out of TAZ, T-A-Z paper. And the article said, I won't try the pronunciation of the headlines. The gist of the article is that during Margaret Thatcher's visit to Germany in March of 87, she did admit that various defense ministers under her had lied to those in the House of Commons for 4 years, that there were 300 of the controversial new atomic grandees, such as first-strike weapons already deployed in West Germany by the United States Armed Forces. And it's these atomic warhead grandees that are to be replaced with the neutron bombs once the atomic weapons are in place. The article says the defense minister has always maintained that the decision to deploy hadn't been made, whereas the decision to modernize the nuclear arsenal was actually made in 1983, that long ago, in Montebello, Canada. The modernization of these grenades is supposed to absorb the disarmament effect, in case there's a disarmament between the United States and Soviet Union, and the decision to reduce nuclear weapons in Europe. These grandees are not affected by the current U.S.-Soviet arms talks. They are meant to bring Warsaw Pact troops to a stop as soon as they reach NATO territory. This defense, if we have a defense, they said, is a form of suicide. They need the grandees, and later articles will show how the neutrons will be put into them. The newspaper TAZ, T-A-Z, October the 28th, 1987, has a long editorial on the placement of the neutron bombs, and the article says, President Mitterrand announced yesterday that he is prepared to build the neutron bomb should it be necessary. And as this story unfolds, first they say we have it, but we aren't making them, we're assembling them, but we would make it if we have to. But the punchline is that they're already made and deployed in Germany, and that the new head of NATO will be a man who's been pushing rearmament of Germany constantly. And, of course, the president of Germany, Mr. Richard von Weizsäcker, his father was the liaison of Adolf Hitler to the Vatican and was instrumental in the decision of what days the Battle of the Bulge would take place, where the Waffen-SS united with the United States Army and the OSS. So Mitterrand, early in these articles, and I tell you the punchline so you know where it's going, he says that we could bring this up, this topic. He was going to Germany, and he announced about the neutron bombs just before he was to go to Germany. He was going to spend 4 days with Helmut Kohl. But the newspaper noted that this is a strange thing for him to bring this up, this topic, at this moment that he makes this announcement just when he's ready to go to Germany. Since 1984, he has avoided any talk of the subject of the neutron bomb. The main question in France has always been where the neutron should be deployed. And it turns out that the decision in Germany was to decide which cities it would be deployed in. This article says the openness of the discussion now about neutrons can only have one reason. The conditions have changed in Mitterrand's mind, and one suspects that being with Helmut Kohl, they don't exactly reject Mitterrand's inquiries about the deployment possibilities of the neutron bomb. A so-called tank barrier, an unproved version of the conventional grenade, can be sold more easily to the public because they won't object to that. It'll look like ground forces. Only with this background does the place and time of Mitterrand's appearance make sense. The discussion of the deployment of the French neutron bomb in West Germany should be opened. And then, of course, there was a long article, July 28, 1987, an entire full-page story in a German newspaper. It was actually two pages. This friend translated it for me. And it's a long story with a lot of material that she didn't translate, but much that I'll share with you now. I couldn't possibly put it all on the air. The gist of the story is that Charles Hernay, H-E-R-N-Y, Francois Mitterrand's close military advisor, he was France's first socialist defense minister, stepped down as a result of the Greenpeace affair in 1985, but he's very active now, and he represents the reconciliation between the socialists and the military. And keep in mind that Mr. Le Pen, a gentleman who is very high up in the political entourage of France and would like to be president, is really an outright Nazi. He's as close to a Nazi as you can get in Europe, outside of the Greek military junta that was in power, thanks to our CIA, starting in 1967 for a few years. Mr. Le Pen and some very high up people in the French government are outright fascists. But the military and the Socialist Party are working together. The article explains that Mr. Hernay is going to assist France and Germany because they have mutual defense interests. The old problem was the French tactical nuclear weapons, the Pluto, that could fall on East and West Germany. But they've solved all this with a Hades missile, a range of 350 kilometers, KMs, I guess, stationed in Germany. I'm not sure how far that is, but it would reach these missiles that the Hades would reach inside of East Germany. They don't advocate German nuclear weapons at this time because the Soviets wouldn't tolerate that. But there's no reason why West Germany shouldn't have a co-decision right as to their own use. And so the gentlemen in France are working very closely with the Germans. France does possess deterrence. West Germany doesn't. So progress has to be made. The signals are on go for the neutron bomb. It lacks only President Mitterrand's signature and public opinion. And then they go on later and explain that he doesn't even have to tell you if it's there. That's part of the Constitution, that it could be secret, so there's no guarantee his signature isn't on it. Pierre Mesmer, who was the head of the Gaullists, Charles de Gaulle's longest defense minister from 1960 to 69 and premier under Papandreou, has a key position within the right-wing military camp. The denuclearization of Europe that they're worried about, the one that was discussed at our recent summit meeting, the denuclearization does not come into question for France's tactical and strategical weapons. The strategy of Europe's defense must be based on tactical and strategic weapons. Long-term perspective for the defense of Europe can only be a defense with European means. The Pluto and Hades missiles are in West Germany. The neutron bomb solves the contradiction, the demands of West Germans and the French. Germans fear that the bird, the BIRD, will be destroyed because of the neutron bomb. It is not a mass destructive weapon, and France's hesitancy to deploy its troops in Germany without nuclear backup. All parties agreed on the French nuclear policy. The French are not as sensitive to the nuclear question as the Germans are. The French public is more balanced. Nuclear weapons constitute for the president a deterrence for them, and deterrence must take technological development into account. The technological development is the placement, of course, of the neutron bombs. There's a fear in Europe of disarmament because of Mr. Gorbachev, and therefore the plans have been made by France and Germany that they would not be sympathetic necessarily to the reaction of the German public this time. Therefore, the plans for a French-German nuclear alliance do not belong in the public square. That would be a great psychological mistake. And, of course, Jimmy Carter played down the importance of the neutron bomb, and when Ronald Reagan became president, he tried to push the selling of the neutron bomb in Europe. That's when Alexander Haig had William Casey of the CIA using CIA journalists as cover. Regular journalists in Europe actually were working for the CIA trying to get the neutron bomb over there, and John Singlaub was bucking up against Jimmy Carter when Carter was president because he thought the neutron bomb should be deployed in Southeast Asia. That was one of the reasons Carter brought Singlaub home, besides the fact that he didn't want the troops out of South Korea. He wanted the neutron bomb and go ahead on that. Now, another editorial, July 28, 1987. This is the gist of this article. Chancellor, ex-Chancellor Schmidt of Germany stated in a recent speech in a newspaper, Die Zeit, that the disarmament talks on scrapping the medium-range missiles, should they be realized, would be the first time talks led to disarmament and not rearmament. That's what the excitement was with Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev. However, Mr. Schmidt said, without even a simple missile having been pulled out of the agreement or even being ready to sign it, the next step that follows then is rearmament. And rearmament was being engineered starting this the end of July, as if it hasn't been going on since the end of World War II. And the deeper meaning of the French test, this article says, or editorial says, lies in the fact that on the island of Mururoa, M-U-R-U-R-O-A, the atoll, it's becoming very clear that France is not only developing the neutron bomb, but they've been testing it in the South Pacific and the islands over there, not on their own. And the British, during World War II and other times, tested their biological chemical warfare on Africans in Nigeria. That's why I believe they're capable of testing the neutron bomb in Cameroon. But the French were testing it over at the Mururoa Atoll in South Pacific. France is developing the neutron bomb for mass production. This was July 28th. The militarists are ready in agreement where it should be deployed, and in the general German Republic and along which borders, the German neighbors, some ways, will have to be convinced. As enticement, the Germans are offered what they call the second key, in quotes, or co-determination rights partnership, for the first steps to a nuclearized Germany. French nuclear bombs with German rights constitute more of a rearmament than the NATO double-track decision, where at least negotiations were envisioned to which Gorbachev could react. Another story, April 14th, 1987. Does the United States have the neutron bomb? This is out of the Frankfurt Rundschau. That's the name of the paper. The British University of Bradford has come out with a study which reveals the United States already has 600 neutron warheads on hand in Seneca, New York. The study titled Preparations for First Use of Nuclear Weapons in Europe. And I'll take a one-minute break and get back to the subject of United States and neutron bombs.